Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. It appears. We think we may be, but we gotta just check it out. That I might be, we might be out of YouTube jail for now. And Facebook, not so sure what they plan to do, but we may be liberated from their digital incarceration as well. But we'll see.
I think YouTube let you out on good behavior.
They let me out on good behavior. I was able to get time off for the way that I conducted myself while incarcerated. And now I have been freed. Liberation. Liberty. Yes. This is a shame. I might have a little bit more to say about this a little bit later on in the program. I don't know. Maybe Google censoring and the Twitter. But before we get to all of that, go ahead, Jeff.
No. I was looking to see if the video was up. Are you seeing it?
I think it's up. It looks like it's a little sluggish. So in case you guys are wondering what I'm talking about, you can get the Hamilton Corner live via your radio stations. Go to AFR.net or UrbanFamilyTalk.com to see what stations are on in your area. We are on over 180 stations all across the country. I can't tell each and every person which station we're on. In addition to that, you can catch the live stream video via Facebook Live. And for those who are not bookers, and who knows how much longer all any of us have to be bookers, we'll see, you can catch the live video feed via YouTube. We have the Hamilton Corner YouTube channel that many people enjoy there. I get messages about that.
Yeah.
And so you can listen to the program there and watch if you want to. See what kind of furry sweater I'm wearing or whatever. You can do so by watching the program.
And on YouTube, the nice thing is about that is you could subscribe to the channel and be notified each time.
That's right. Be notified each new episode, each new edition. So you can listen all of those different ways. But it's amazing what's happening, though. And I hope you're paying attention to what's going on. But before we get ahead of ourselves, this week we've been focusing our attention on the preborn ministry and coming alongside them in an effort to really raise funds to provide ultrasounds for abortion-minded women. I've shared before how preborn not only provides care and counseling, but they provide ultrasounds to the women as well as present the gospel. We believe with everything in us that this is a worthy ministry. Our goal here is to provide 3,000 women with ultrasound so that we can hopefully save 3,000 babies. I don't need to tell you guys. You guys are well aware of the onslaught really babies that are being slaughtered. And quite frankly, I tire of the reference to what is literally infanticide or baby murder as abortion, because really it's a euphemism to try to soften the blow of what's really happening. When you consider the fact that they use these four steps to enter the amniotic sacs and rip these babies from limb. And then you have the grotesque realization that was exposed by David Dalyden and company, that they even discuss the sales of the body parts post-abortion. I mean, it's literally a disgusting phenomenon that, if you're like me, that it causes an internal revulsion that says, I got to do something about this. Well, you have an opportunity to do that right now. $28 will provide one ultrasound. You know, that's these days, that's a Chick-fil-A drive-through trip. You know, you can skip one of those and provide an ultrasound for an abortion-minded woman. 80% of abortion-minded women, upon having an ultrasound where they're able to see their baby for the first time or hear the heartbeats of their babies for the first time, 80% of the time, those women choose to deliver those babies. So it's something that I have to tell you that it has gripped my heart. The culture of death that percolates in our nation right now, It's absolutely sickening. And so this is something that may appear to some to be small, but I can tell you, to those individual families, this is literally a life-changing opportunity. In addition to what I just shared, and I haven't talked much about this yet, there may be some of you are listening that you may be able to provide an entire ultrasound machine. Preborn works with over 500 pregnancy resource centers, Christian pregnancy resource centers across the country. Some of them don't yet have ultrasound machines. You may be able to write a $15,000 check to purchase those machines. We would love for you to do that in this particular campaign, because our hope and our goal is to not day after day come on here, come on the program, highlighting the bad news, tell you about all the ridiculous things that are going on without providing an opportunity to do something about it. And so this is something that you and I, we all can do together. So I would encourage you, if you would like to support this ministry, you can do so by calling 877-616-2396. That number again is 877-616-2396. Or you can go to AFR.net and give securely right on the website. Again, AFR.net. Now, we're going to turn today for the scripture to begin the program to the Gospel of John. John chapter 18, verses 1 through 8 is what I'm going to read. And just as a bit of an overview, I say obviously sometimes and I shouldn't. The Gospel of John was written by John, the beloved disciple, the one to whom Jesus entrusted Mary when he was on the cross. And the primary, if you read the entire gospel, you'll see very clearly one of the primary purposes of John's writing was to convey the divinity of Jesus Christ, the preexistent Jesus Christ. Right at the beginning of John, right in the first chapter, the first verse, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. Right at the beginning, John is announcing, boom, right on the scene, that this is no ordinary fellow we're talking about. This is the Messiah whom was promised through the annals of the prophets. This is the one whom we have been waiting for. So in that vein, I just wanted to share this, and I pray that this encourages some of you who are listening right now. John 18, I'll read verses 1 through 8, then I'll provide a little bit of commentary. Oh, let me say this. Well, I'll start. When Jesus had spoken these words, what words am I talking about? What words are they talking about? From chapter 17, the preceding verses, Jesus was praying the high priestly prayer, praying that the disciples would be one, as he and the Father are one. And so that's the words that Jesus is referring to. But he says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. So Judas, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen to him, came forward and said to them, "Whom do you seek?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they withdrew back and fell to the ground. So he asked them again, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these men go." Oh, man, I can feel the warmth stirring up in my chest as I'm reading this. Clearly. The soldiers who came to arrest Jesus, they didn't know what he looked like, because when they came to arrest him, they just knew because of Judas's snitching, his betrayal, that this was a place where Jesus would go with his disciples. And Jesus knew what was going on. He knew what time it was already. So he initiated the conversation saying, "Who are you looking for?" And they say, "Jesus of Nazareth." They know the name, but they don't know the frame. You get what I'm talking about? And so he yells out, "I am he." Of course, on one hand, he's identifying the fact that "I am the Jesus of Nazareth whom you are seeking." But on the other hand, he's making an announcement in front of these soldiers that though I am in a position that many may perceive as being weak. Though I have been praying in the garden, and it is time, and I'm aware that it is time for me to fulfill the purpose for me becoming incarnate, I want to make sure all of y'all know that I'm not only a man, as you know men. I am He. I am Yahshua HaMashiach. I am the promised Messiah. And just to confirm, this fact for you, that proclamation was responded to by the people who were going to arrest Jesus by doing what? Retreating and falling back. You don't see this in the other gospels because John is writing from a particular vantage point to let all y'all know. I feel like I'm Birdman. I ain't gonna say it no more. Put some respect on my name. This is the Lord Jesus Christ. And so they responded with falling back, and they were in such disarray. Jesus then confirms that declaration by saying that, wait, who did you say you were looking for? And they said it again. He said, I already told y'all who I am, because Jesus is revealing to them very clearly what he said in another place. No man takes my life. I lay it down willingly. Jesus is letting them know, though you come with your torches and your lanterns and swords, you have no power to overcome me. The only thing that's going to transpire here in this moment is what I allow to transpire. And here's where I want to encourage you. That at the very moment where the very soldiers and the spectators, they would have perceived Jesus as being in a weak position, they would have perceived the disciples being in a spot of weakness, the evidence of the strength of our Lord is made clear, abundantly clear for all to see. And what I am endeavoring to convey to you today, you may be going through a difficult moment. You may be going through something to where, you know, I'm supposed to be an heir of Jesus Christ, but why is this befalling me in such a way? Can I let you in on a secret? Sometimes, many of us as believers, we spend too much time, or should I say, we spend lots of time trying to position our lives in such a way where we no longer have to trust God for anything. We profess to be believers and dependent on the Lord, but we really like to have a life where we really don't really need him. We don't like to be reminded that we actually do need him. And God is so good. He loves us so much that he won't allow us to continue on with stinking thinking. And so sometimes we may find ourselves in difficult positions because the Lord wants us to be reminded, say, hey, don't forget me. That's why in Deuteronomy 8, the Lord through Moses warned the Israelites, listen, I know you're trusting me when you're wandering in the wilderness, but when you get a home state, when you get a homeland and your bellies get full, that's when the temptation to abandon me arises. And many of us know that the times in our lives that we have the most vibrant and robust prayer lives is only when we're facing difficulty. My encouragement to you, if you are going through a position of difficulty, is to remind you that he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. Just as it was with Jesus in the garden at the moment of his arrest, where it was perceived that he was in a weak spot, he proclaims, I am he. And the polyman fall back. And they're in such disarray where they couldn't even proceed to arrest Jesus without him helping them to do so. So what am I saying? I'm saying fall on the rock. Depend on the Lord. Don't allow the difficulty that you may be facing to drive you to a position to where you become despondent, thinking, oh no, what can I do? There's no God. He won't help me. No, in your weakness, his strength is perfected. In the times that you have exhausted your capacity, all you have done is created a platform for omnipotence to be displayed on your behalf. So instead of kicking against the prick, let us lean on the Lord in the difficult moments and then learn the lesson of the difficult moment that Jesus reveals to us in John 15. He is the vine, we are the branches. Apart from him, we can do nothing. That's not saying we can't perform activities. It's saying that we can't perform anything that has eternal significance. So let us simply, if that's the case, why do we need to be put in a position where we need to say, in case of emergency, break glass, to depend on him? Let's just depend on him from the onset. If you're a millionaire or you're a dollarere, let's depend on the Lord. If you have billions or if you have ones, let's depend on the Lord. Because depending upon him, leaning into the vine, is how the branches get nourished. I am he, and the arresters fall back.
Finally, an investigation of Planned Parenthood is underway. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. The U.S. Department of Justice is investigating Planned Parenthood regarding the sale of aborted baby body parts for profit. Praise God that two organ procurement companies which purchased these body parts now have to pay more than $7 million and cease all business operations in California. The Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives both referred Planned Parenthood and the organ procurement companies to the Department of Justice for criminal investigation and prosecution. This investigation is the result of the 14 undercover videos produced by the Center for Medical Progress and Liberty Counsel's client, Sandra Merritt. Granted, there is no amount of money that can bring back all the precious lives lost to this despicable practice of Planned Parenthood. But now Planned Parenthood must face justice. Please pray and stay informed at lc.org.
Preborn is saving babies' lives through ultrasound.
Well, my name is Dan Steiner, and I'm the president of Preborn. Ultrasound truly is a game changer. When a mom comes into a pregnancy center under pressure to abort her child, perhaps the dad's gone, perhaps her mother is pressuring her. Most of the time in her heart, she doesn't want to abort, but what she needs is something that will give her the strength to choose life against the pressures that are forcing her to consider abortion. That's the ultrasound. 40% of the time, if you tried to talk her out of it without the ultrasound, you might be successful. However, if she hears her baby's heartbeat and sees that baby on ultrasound, everything's different. 80% of the time, she'll choose life.
To donate, dial 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or donate securely at AFR.net.
Hey, sweet family, this is Lauren from Living Life with Lauren, and it's my heart's desire to be salt and light, just as Jesus instructed his followers to be. I want us to help one another along the way as we face challenges of this life, but going through it together sure does make the road easier, doesn't it? I want to thank you for listening, downloading our podcast, and connecting with me on Facebook at Living Life with Lauren. This is your invitation to join me Saturday evenings at 8 Central Time for laughter and tears right here on American Family Radio.
Join American Family Radio for In God We Trust, Saving a Sick America. This 30-minute radio special features Dr. Michael Brown, author, speaker, and radio host.
It's not too late for America. If we'll humble ourselves, if we'll pray, if we'll cry out for mercy, if we'll start beginning with us, not pointing the finger at the world, my sin, my coldness, my complacency, my lukewarmness, my compromise.
Listen this Saturday afternoon, 2:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. Man, we enjoyed that scripture so much. We've been talking about it the whole way through. Jason said, man, this is the God who spoke the world into existence. So imagine hearing him say, I am he. You want to get me started? But thank you all for tuning in. I have some stuff. I've been trying to get to this and haven't been able to do so. Of course, you've been hearing lots of discussions in the media lately about the president, the negotiation, DACA, things of that nature. And I've talked about this before, but it seems that there is no, let me say it this way. It seems that the lunacy surrounding this issue is inexhaustible. And I saw a segment. Well, let me start here. I have some audio I'll play for you from Representative Joaquin Castro, who is one of the up-and-comers in the Democrat Party. He has a twin brother who's the mayor, by the way, of San Antonio, Texas, that they're twins from Harvard, that many are salivating on the Democrat side for them to take a more prominent position in politics. And Joaquin Castro just says very plainly something that has been spouted repeatedly concerning the fact that the Democrats will not budge on a quid pro quo DACA for border wall funding. If you would, Jay, play clip number 3 for me, please.
Do you think that Democrats should withhold votes from a bill to help Dreamers if it includes funding for the wall?
I will certainly vote against it, and I know most Democrats will vote against it. I can only speak for the House of Representatives, of course. In the Senate, they have different rules, and it's a different matter. But I would suspect that you will have the overwhelming majority of Democrats vote against it, yes.
Now, that is a position that has been repeated over and over and over again. If you watched any of the footage from the president's open-door negotiation meeting, you saw many of the Democrat representatives and senators there, DACA, DACA, DACA. Even Senator Dianne Feinstein said, we'd like an up or down vote on a clean DACA bill. What they mean by clean bill is a bill that is solely dedicated to this one issue without additional issues put into the same piece of legislation. And I've said this before. There are people who disagree with me. And of course, you're welcome to do so. I've heard people say that, well, the Republicans are in a tough position because showing a lack of compassion for the little children who were brought here against their will is a loser politically. And I've heard that. I understand that position, but I don't agree. I think the president has more to lose and the Republican Party has more to lose that if they go the route of amnesty without securing what the president has promised. I think amnesty is more of a problematic issue for the president. And I just would like to send a little bit of a reality serum to those GOP strategists who think President Trump can do anything to get positive coverage from the mainstream talking stake media and to get Democrat people to love him. It ain't gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. It is a pipe dream to think that if you capitulate and grant amnesty, that all of a sudden that CNN, MSNBC, and the whole gamut of them will all of a sudden begin fawning over President Donald John Trump. It's not going to happen. So why not dance with the ones who brung you and do what you promised to do? So I've said before, I think it's a bad position to try to approach the DACA issue as if it is as if everybody is the same. I don't think you should grant categorical, automatic amnesty. I think you need to evaluate each person on an individual basis. Because guess what? People are different. There are things that you can take into consideration that would aid a person who is currently here legally in moving towards some type of legal status down the line or something like that. Military service, education, employment, things of that nature, consistency in paying taxes if they have been paying taxes or whatever. But to sit here and say that, okay, even though I've been promising all these things, a border wall, all these things, and now all of a sudden we're going to completely U-turn and start talking amnesty. Those are the things that have gotten the Republican Party in such a position where the Republicans don't even trust the Republican Party. I mean, it's a fact. I have long since distanced myself from an affiliation with the Republican Party because I felt that the Republican Party would dangle the carrot of having a sound political platform while having no intention whatsoever to actually govern according to that platform. And for me, I'm sick and tired of it. I think everybody, every individual, all of the so-called voting blocks, they should stop being voting blocks and make political candidates earn their votes. It doesn't matter to me what you say, what party you're in, what are your policies, and let me see what you're doing once you're in office. And if you are not adhering to what you said you're going to do, regardless of your party affiliation, I'm not rolling with it. Bottom line. I've said before that the Democrat Party trades on identity politics, and I said before that I believe the Republican Party trades on believing Christians will automatically vote for them because they have an R behind their names. And I think the days for that are over. Well, as this conversation is unfolding, and I see, quite frankly, many people who are amongst the Republican Party in D.C., that I have lovingly referred to as Republicrats, they're all too willing to capitulate on amnesty. They are all too willing to sabotage the president's attempts to secure border security and border funding. I mean, what happened to the days of let's secure the border, then talk about everything else? What happened to those days? Maybe they've gone in the dustbin right alongside of we don't need a top-down government-run health insurance program. Did I just say that out loud? Mm-hmm. I think I did. Anywho, I have some audio I want to share from you because Tucker Carlson on his program a couple days ago was talking about this very thing, and he had Jorge Ramos, I like saying Ramos, from Univision on his program to talk a little bit about it. So we'll start with clip number one, where Jorge and Tucker are talking immigration.
They're here because of you and me. It's simply a matter of supply and demand. They're here simply because there are jobs for them. And also, we have to admit, because in Latin America, they make maybe $5 a day. And they can make that exact amount of money here in just a few hours. But we are responsible for them. And
so then, we're responsible. So in other words, so because this is a successful country.
You and I are responsible. We are responsible for them.
Because we have taken the time to build a functioning country, a clean, safe country with a working justice system and a thriving economy, then we are somehow morally required to let anybody who wants to come here come, and we can't complain about it? How does that work exactly?
No, because every time you go to a hotel, every time you go to a restaurant, they're helping you. They are working for us.
They're not working for me. They're working for companies that want to pay less. That's why they hire them. And the owners of those companies make a lot of money. Probably. And we get to pay higher taxes in order to support them living here.
Now, I don't know. I might blow a gasket, but I'm going to tell you, Tucker Carlson hit on something right there that is often not discussed. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it right now, because the facts are that one of the biggest attracting features for illegal immigration is the fact that we have many American companies that want cheap labor. And so, in my opinion, one of the things that has to be addressed in immigration conversations, and let me say this right now, I am so tired of people conflating illegal immigration with legal immigration, as if you're allergic to the word illegal. But it's not that they're allergic to the word illegal. It's that they want to conflate those issues so that you can be shamed and intimidated into bowing your knee to the illegal immigration bail. But the facts are that if there were not companies who were actively interested in having cheaper labor, illegal immigration could be cut rather quickly. So that is a conversation that has to take place. But let me get to this issue of Jorge Ramos saying that you and I are responsible for this. I mean, this is some of the most ridiculous logic I've ever heard of in my life, that, oh, we're responsible because every time we patronize a service. I said, man, that is ridiculous, because one of the things that happens, unfortunately, is that people who live in large cities, they have large city bias. Like, they believe in things like overpopulation. I want to say, man, when's the last time you drove across Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi? There's lots of land everywhere. But of course, if your frame of reference is New York and its skyscrapers and its subways, then it's easier for you to have that perception. Similarly, I've lived in states where you have high incidences of illegal immigrants who take certain jobs. But guess what? In other states, you don't see that. You don't see that. So to assume, and in my opinion, this is a very racist assumption, to assume that the people that are working in hotels and babysitting and mowing lawns and things of that nature, that they're always going to be illegal immigrants? How foolish are you? For a long time, I was the lawnmower at my church. I cut my church's grass for a long time. Me, I was the janitor, cleaning the toilets and everything else. So it's just, it's one of those things. It kind of reminds me of Judas in the Bible. Remember when the Bible records that Judas was Jesus's and the disciples's treasurer. He had the money bag. And when the woman came with the alabaster box, what happened? Judas said, oh no, that was an expensive perfume. We could have used that to do all sorts of things with the money. And the Bible lets you in on a little secret. He said that because he was holding the money bag and homeboy was stealing. And so his thievery caused him to immediately focus on what we could have been doing with the money. The same thing happens with a lot of these regressives, because they always want to call people racist when the reality is that they're the racist people themselves. Jorge Ramos can't imagine that there's somebody other than illegal immigrants cutting grass. That's ridiculous. But wait. There's more. Let's go to clip two, because this is, I'll just let you hear the clip, then I'll get into it. Go to clip two with good old Jorge.
I think when President Trump uses the term chain migration, those are code words. He's really saying, you know, I don't want more immigrants from Asia or Latin America coming to this country. I want to stop that. And what okay. I want to make America okay. white again.
What you're doing is throwing
is
because what you're doing, rather than engage in an adult argument using reason, you're accusing people you disagree with of bigotry, which is a little much, actually, considering that you're demanding that Americans who were born here let in people who snuck in illegally and all their family, and if they say anything about it, they're racist.
Oh, Lord. That's day one, Mr. Charles. That's day one. Every time you want to try to shut down a conversation, we can go ahead and start calling people names. You see, we're going to call names. When you can't have a debate on the merits of a subject, we're going to start calling names. Chain migration is code words. It's code words for white supremacy. I didn't know that, did you, Tucky? I got you, boy. This is insane, guys. This is play number one out of the regressive playbook. When the debate is not going well for you, start calling names. And so now, good old Mr. Ramos is going to say chain migration is code for make America white again. Boy, this is ludicrous. Do you realize that America has the most favorable disposition towards immigrants in the world? Do you realize what this world would be without America and its outreach for refugees and human assistance and the whole nine yards? Listen, my name is Abraham Hamilton, and I am an American. And I'm sick and tired of people attempting to condescend to treat America as if we are just this bastion of immorality. America has been the world's assistant for decades, if not centuries. And to add to that, there has been no other system of government that has been more favorable to taking people out of poverty and putting them in a position to live abundant lives than the American capitalist system. It's a fact. It's a fact. Do you realize things like indoor plumbing are luxuries in other countries? Even in Europe, if you go to try to book hotel rooms, that you would have to pay a little extra money to get a hotel room with the toilet and bathroom facilities in your actual room? Yet we consistently are referred to in such a manner by regressives, quite frankly, as if we are wholly immoral. Listen. As a sovereign nation, we have the lawful authority to set our priorities concerning immigration. Nobody has a right to come here. And there's nothing immoral about determining what's best for your nation in terms of immigration policy. Yet you have good old Mr. Ramos to say chain migration is code for making America white again. Right, Mr. Ramos. Unfortunately for you, we're not going to allow you to get that to shut down the conversation. No, sir, we're not. When determining who should come here, it is perfectly within our lawful and moral authority to set our own immigration priorities and objectives. And I'm not going to allow you to shame me into thinking otherwise. Now, is it unfortunate what's happening in other countries like Mexico? Yes. I mean, just this week, the State Department has released a no-go travel warning to five states in Mexico. Don't go there because you likely will get killed. Yes, but America, and this is the not unspoken truth in this reality. We have people who use the painful stories of many individuals from other countries because they really are open borders advocates in the first place. It's not that they're so concerned about the individual concern about people and their poverty, because the world's poverty, if we allowed everybody who wanted to come to America to come in here, we wouldn't even put a dent in the poverty that exists in the world. The best thing we can do for countries and people that are having difficulty in their home countries is to help the home countries as best as we can to further establish stability. And I don't mean in the sense of some globalist nation building type sense, as people would like us to help. That is the best thing we can do, because guess what? You have trash Benistans that have great resources, but you have horrible governmental philosophies and corrupt individuals like, oh, I don't know, Venezuela.
There's no reason for Venezuela to be broken, to be absolutely dirt broke, but they are because they have corrupt leadership and a socialist governmental system. That's not our fault. And it's not the taxpayers' responsibility. So I respectfully object to Mr. Ramos' assertion that we're responsible for illegal immigration.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
8 Days of Hope started after Hurricane Katrina, and we were blown away by the devastation that we saw on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi and down in Orleans. And then this past year, when we went to Houston, 8 Days of Hope, our rapid response team, we stayed for almost 7 weeks. We had never seen hundreds of thousands of families waiting for somebody to come and help them. And now you get a chance to be the hands and feet of Jesus. March 10th to March 24th, 8 Days of Hope is going to do its first ever back-to-back trip. 8 Days of Hope, 14 and 15. It's free. All you have to do is get to Houston. We provide the food and lodging, a couple great-looking t-shirts. We're looking for skilled professionals, people who know how to work with their hands, and maybe they do this for a living. We're also looking for people that are less skilled but are still looking to be a part of something way bigger than just themselves. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information, 8daysofhope.com. Come be a part of the largest rebuilding trip ever planned by 8 Days of Hope. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information, 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Last December, Democrats said President Trump's historic tax cuts were a monumental brazen theft from the American middle class. Nancy Pelosi called it Armageddon. Yet in spite of the political fear-mongering, the tax cuts have actually benefited the middle class. Hundreds of companies are raising wages, increasing benefits, creating new jobs. That stands in stark contrast to economic policies enacted in states run by the Democrats. In January, 18 states and 20 cities implemented mandatory minimum wage increases. As a result, many businesses, mostly in the food industry, have been forced to lay off workers. Red Robin just announced they're eliminating busboys. Chili's and Applebee's have replaced service with tableside tablets. And Jack in the Box is testing technology that would replace human cashiers with robots. Republicans create jobs, Democrats destroy jobs. Just something to remember in November on Election Day. I'm Todd Stearns.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We will open the phone lines this segment. If you want to participate in the chatter du jour, you are welcome to call 888-589-8840. That number, once again, is 888-589-8840. But before we get to the phone lines, I want to share this story. Actually, there's a couple of stories all connected. I'll try to do it as quickly as I can. Google, the subsidiary of Alphabet, you know, one of those corporations that's pushing toward a $1 trillion valuation in 2018, yeah. They have been called to the carpet because of their new fact-check feature almost exclusively targets conservative sites. So what do I mean? What am I talking about? Well, if you go to Google, and by the way, if you don't know, if you're new to the program, I've shared with the listeners many times over that I don't use Google because I don't like the way that they do bidnas. I don't like it. And so I use a search engine called DuckDuckGo because I'm just not, I don't want to do Google tracking my behavior and attempting to monetize my searches and things of that nature. So I don't use them. I use DuckDuckGo. But Google, the largest search engine in the world, they have added a fact-checking feature that when you search for a site, there's now a box that'll pop up that'll tell you, oh, by the way, this site does this. And these are some claims that they've made that have been proven to be false. And it almost exclusively highlights conservative sites and Christian sites for targeting. And to add insult to injury, their fact-checking service is often wrong, saying that the site has made assertions that they have not made, yet they do not go to the lengths of correcting that error. It just leaves the impression that this conservative site is not to be trusted. But when you put liberal sites in the search engine, guess what? You don't get many reviewed fact-checked claims. And so Google is now being exposed for for exclusively targeting conservative sites with this fact-checking feature. And then we have this little ditty from Twitter. If you would, Jay, would you play clip number 5?
What is Twitter's tactic when it comes to censorship?
One strategy is to shadow ban so that you have ultimate control. The idea of a shadow ban is that you ban someone, but they don't know they've been banned because they keep posting, but no one sees their content. So they just think that no one's engaging with their content when in reality no one's seeing it.
Shadow banning is a way of blocking users from a social media platform without notifying them. Tweets from a shadow banned user still appear to their followers, but don't show up in search results or anywhere else on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Twitter has been exposed now through another James O'Keefe special with Project Veritas, his organization, where they've conducted a host of undercover interviews with Twitter employees and former employees, where they admit to shadow banning and censoring conservative Twitter users. And they execute this shadow banning tactic by identifying the conservatives, identifying the Christians, cutting off their access to send their information to their Twitter followers while they're just posting away, but not having the same amount of interaction with their digital and social media engagement that they expected. But they don't know what's happened because they have been shadow banned. Just to add to the discussion here, let's give you a little bit more from one of their programmers who was responsible for highlighting material that they deemed unfit for Twitter usage. Go ahead and play clip 4, please.
Let's say for the pro-Trump thing, and I am anti-Trump. I was like, oh, I banned this whole account. It'll go to you. And then it's at your discretion. And if you're anti-Trump, you're like, oh, you know what? Mo was right. Let it go.
Oh, so it wasn't automated. It was a user and services person would deem it pro-Trump and take it down.
Example, they said, oh, this is pro-Trump. You know, I don't want it because, you know, it offends me. That's that. I say, I ban this whole thing. And it goes over and you're like, oh, you know what? I don't like it too. You know, Mo's right. Let's go. That's it. You're like, Mo's right. Let's carry on. What's next?
So I flag something that's going to go by you.
Correct. And then, you know, you look at it, you're like, oh, hey, this is pro-Trump, you know what? And this might probably be like, oh, I don't like it.
Yeah, you know what? So on the reverse of that, they would just let a lot of the, I guess, left-leaning or liberal stuff to go through unchecked?
It can come through check, and then I'll be like, oh, you know what? This is okay. Let it go.
So you heard it right from, and that was Mo. I can't pronounce his last name. But I posted this Project Veritas undercover video. It's about 15 minutes long. I couldn't play the whole thing on the program on the Hamilton Corners Facebook page. I urge you to go there and check it out and share this information with your friends to where it wasn't even an automated process that they are actively engaged in a censoring conservative viewpoints. And so to connect the dots here, consider this story, what I'm talking about, Twitter censoring conservative views, Google involved in it, and added into the conversation we had earlier this week with the titans of tech having these orgiastic parties month by month, to where their commitment to innovation leads them not only to want to break the barriers of technology and innovation. If they can rule and change the world in tech and innovation, why can't they rule and change the world in social interaction? We have to tie these things together. So to say it simply, I don't know how much longer you're going to be able to get Facebook Live and YouTube live streaming videos for this program. Because you have forces that are actively engaged in attempting to eliminate particular viewpoints from discourse. And listen, I don't care whether you are conservative, libertarian, you know, regressive, whatever. No matter where you are, you should care about this. You should care about this. Because what is America if not the beacon for free speech? What type of populace and what type of future will we have if we cannot interact with disagreeing, diverging viewpoints? As promised, I'll go to the phone lines. We'll start in Greenville, North Carolina. Thank you all who are holding on the phone right now for holding and being patient as you have been. We'll go first to Teresa in Greenville. Thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brother Abraham, just for being there. As a sister in Christ, I'd like to tell you that I love you very much. You are a unique individual, and you seem to have a very intuitive, clear look into what's really happening in America.
Oh, thank you for that, Teresa.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. Please tell your parents they raised a great son. The immigration issue is so difficult because we're a nation of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that you don't hyphenate your Americanism,
mm-hmm.
With your race and then American. But once we formed a nation and those people agreed to the laws, they dropped the fact that they were Irish or Italian or whatever, and we all became Americans. And it is our moral duty to protect our borders from other people that would seek to do us harm. And it seems like the average little people like us are the only ones that seem to truly understand that. That's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. Thank you, Teresa, for your call and for your comments. And yes, we are a nation of immigrants, but as a nation, we have the right to distinguish legal immigration from illegal immigration. And listen, most of you listening, you know I have immigrants in my family, legal immigrants. I have legal immigrants in my family that had to flee the war-torn nations of Nicaragua. I have that in my own family. But when we cease to be a nation of laws, and I've said this before, that I believe that the entire DACA conversation is just an initial offering to an ultimate pursuit of amnesty across the board, because we cannot forget that the original presentation of DACA was a part of a larger DREAM Act that sought an amnesty pursuit across the board. We cannot have the recency bias that we are unable to recognize that. And so what happens in these conversations, we get put in a position where you have just binary choices. It's either A or B. You are either pro-immigration or you're anti-immigrant. And that's not the issue at all. I don't think this, you need to approach this conversation compassionately. We must have compassion. Yes, but we can't allow our compassion to cause us to abandon a good sense. To categorically conclude that an entire group of people who are in the country illegally, right, to categorically conclude that everybody has to be legalized is an unwise proposition. I also think it's an improper proposition to just say, oh, we just kick everybody out. And I don't think that's the route that we have to go either. It's not either or. But we're put in these binary positions because we have people who want to manipulate us into thinking the way that they want us to think. Back to the phone lines. We'll go next to Mobile, Alabama, where Kim is on the line. Kim, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Hi, Brother Abraham. A few minutes ago, you played a clip with Tucker and Jorge.
Yes.
Where he said that, hey, in their country, you know, the reason they're coming here is in their country, they can make $5 a day.
That's right.
But over here, they can make it in a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's telling me that they're paying them $1.65 an hour, and that's slave labor.
Yeah, you're right about it. And here's the thing. Thank you for your call and your comments, Kim. Here's the thing. The solution is not to adopt an entire nation's population because they're poor. That's not the answer for the ones that are poor.
The answer is, what can we do to strengthen our nation, and what can we do to help the nation as a nation if we can? But we cannot compel another nation to help to accept our assistance. We have to come to the place where we realize immigration to our country is not a right. There is no inherent right to the citizens of the world to come and live in America. It is a privilege. And just as I, as the owner of my home, get to set the standards for who gets to come into my home, and much of the consideration for who comes into my home will be based on would it be good for my home or bad for my home. Just as I do that for my home, we have the prerogative as a nation to do the same. Back to the phone lines. We'll go next to Houston, Texas, where Lynn is on the line. Lynn, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You're doing a great job. Just to reiterate, you know, you talk, the left, they manipulate everything, and they use all these catchwords that they continuously fall back on to try to box us in and make us look bad. But when they do that, why we elected Trump. Bottom line is, when they call us names, we want to turn around and say, no, that we're not anti this, anti that. We are. We're anti murdering babies, number one. Mm-hmm. So you can call it pro-life, and that's what we are. But the bottom line is, we're anti baby murderers. We want to call it what it is, yeah. Because those words are strong. They use strong words to manipulate. To try to manipulate the conversation, and it's time we start coming back with the reality of what it is, and quit sugarcoating it and calling it, you know, abortion. When, you know, reality, we need to call it straight out what it is.
Agreed. Agree with you, Lynn. Listen, there is no doubt in my view. I'll say it in my view that regressives have been far more expert at messaging than conservatives have been. We've often been put on a defensive based on the vernacular that has been chosen. Whereas I refuse to go along with that. I will set the stage for how I want to engage and describe things based on truth, not based on political talking points. But I'll go next to, I don't want to mispronounce your name, but I think it's Ty Wo in Dallas. Thank you for calling the Hamilton program. We're getting close to the end. You have maybe 30 seconds. If you can get it in 30 seconds, go right ahead, sir.
Okay, hey, Gabe. This is Ty Wo. Yes. I'm an immigrant from Nigeria.
Okay.
A legal immigrant. And it took me 19 years to get to this country.
Mm-hmm. And, you said an illegal immigrant?
A legal immigrant.
Okay. Go ahead, sir. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Now, what I want to say is I find it funny when people say that it's a right for them to be in this country, like O'Hare Ramos, or what's his name?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, you know. I've seen a lot of countries where they've had, wars, and people had to run and leave those countries. The same dreamers they're talking about, that they have a right to stay here, they want to stay here. God forbid anything happens in America. I can tell you, they'll be the first people to run out of America because they have somewhere to go to. They run to Mexico, to Nicaragua, wherever they come from. And that's just the truth. All these people saying they have a right, that they want to be, you know, come to America, and they have a right to be here as illegal immigrants and stuff. When trouble starts, they'll run away. They'll abandon the so-called country they've always wanted to come to.
Thank you. Thank you, Ty Wo. Listen, 19 years it took him to get to this country legally. But he did it. 19 years it took him, but he did it. Should he be allowed to be leapfrogged for legality? And he did it legally? Or should we allow ourselves to be pulled around and say that, oh, these are poor little children, when the average age is over 30 years old, if we would be honest about it? I have no problem whatsoever with immigration. Our country and our culture and our nation is enriched by immigration. The problem that I have is with the illegal immigration.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.